All right, Jed, let me just confirm you're there with us.
I'm here.
Beautiful. We are set and ready to roll for our Media Bits Power Hour, an educational teleseminar for those of you in the media space. Whether you're selling ads in print, in your e-newsletter, or your website, you're in the right spot. Whether we're talking about circulation, whether it's free, paid, or controlled, you're also in the right spot. Whether you have a magazine publication or a niche or niche publication that you generate, you're also in the right spot. We're delighted that you are here. As we're getting settled in at the top of the hour, we're always going to encourage you to close your office door, sort of find a quiet spot to really be able to listen to what we're going to be sharing, sort of try to be able to block out any interruptions. It's not an accident that we don't put something on the screen that would simply create a visual distraction. It creates it creates multitasking, which simply means you're not able to incorporate all that we're covering here based on all of the very best in adult research and learning. As we are rolling along, if you have any specific questions related to this topic, hit reply to what brought you here, or send an email to Ernest at Power Hour, and we would be delighted to tuck your questions in. With me is Jed, the CEO and founder of MediaBids. Jed, how about some opening words about MediaBids? What's cooking? What's rocking? I'll say a few introduction words, and we'll get started today, okay?
Okay, great. Well, first of all, thank you for Ernest thank you to Ernest for really leading the way on these teleseminars. He shares an enormous amount of information and is a fantastic resource for all things having to do with newspapers and publishing. And he really knows what he's talking about. So I always learn a lot on these teleseminars. Hopefully, all the people here today will as well. My name is Jed Gould. I'm the president of MediaBids. We are devoted to driving revenue to print publications. We do it in a variety of different ways. But primarily we do it through tracking ads. We place anywhere between 7,000 and 10,000 ads a week in newspapers all around the country, newspapers, magazines, all around the country and in Canada, and we track every single one of them. So we know the results that are generated by ads that appear in large daily newspapers, small weekly newspapers, Shoppers, niche publications. You know, we track every ad, and we use that to show our advertisers how print can generate customers for them, and how print can be a very important part of their media spend. It works. Advertisers understand numbers. They appreciate the fact that we're able to show them this information. You know, it's information that. In my estimation, every publication should be showing to all of their advertisers, large or small. So if you'd like to talk more about it, like to learn more about it, if we can help you in any way to get started on this path of tracking print ads and validating the response that it's received, feel free to reach out to us anytime. Our phone number is on the email, or you can go to mediabids.com. We're always happy to try to help.
Beautiful.
So thanks again for joining us, and take it away, Ernest.
Before I say a couple of opening words about Power Hour, Jed, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure working with you and your team going all the way back to calendar year 2006. We've been rolling along for a long time together. It's always a delight. In fact, today's topic we have never covered before. For those of you who have already worked with MediaBids, you know the value of what they bring and the additional revenue streams and the additional ads that they deliver for you. And in reverse, if you have not, go to MediaBids.com. You will love working with Jed and their team. By way of brief introduction, my name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. I began in the advertising sales industry in 1986, launched three of my own publications, and then migrated over and was a leader in a billion-dollar media group. So I sort of saw, Jed, as you know, the filter of what it means to be an entrepreneur, what it means to bootstrap, what it means to build a business up, and then, of course, what it means to work in a very large media group where everything was questioned, everything had to be justified, and everything lived in a budget. In 1995, Jed, we launched Power Hour, so 25 years ago, and have now coached more than 2,700 ad sales teams and companies and leaders in 14 time zones around the world. As you know, we move around. We're based in Park City, Utah during the ski season and winter months. We do a lot of work with our clients that come to visit us here. Then we do a lot of work with our clients in Europe and the UK during the months of April, May, and then travel across Canada in September and October. So we love helping media teams. Anytime Jed and myself come together, we have three goals for each of our teleseminars. Number one, we do hope to bring new ideas, new perspectives, and new understandings of ways to win in media sales. Number two, if there's something you hear from Jed or myself that you're already doing, it simply means we're confirming that what you're doing matches best practices in our space and sector. And the third piece are just the serendipitous. Jed might be talking about apples, I may be talking about bananas, and you're thinking about cantaloupes or something else that sparks. We love that. Jed's going to share some things today that I don't know yet what he's going to share. It'll spark a story or an example, or I might say something that will spark something for Jed. We do this really fun sort of back and forth. We really enjoy working together, and neither of us quite knows, other than the topic and the couple of the bullets, exactly where we're heading, but we know the compass is due north, which points us nearly to Alaska, right, Jed, if you know what I mean?
Right, we can
always be in Alaska in our mind. So let's get started. Let's talk about bats. Let's talk about media and is this your media secret sauce or your advertising sales secret sauce, right? And BATS is what we're talking about related to BATS, and it stands for what we're going to tell you about today. But before we get there, let's sort of agree that a media and ad sales presentation has a start, right, a beginning, and an ad sale is either what? Won or lost, right? Every single meeting, like you're at bat, right, you get an opportunity to give a presentation, to bring your media story, and to be able to say to that media buyer, that decision maker, whomever that might be, that yes, we have a powerful and compelling story and you want to work with us. So there's a couple of core principles, right, because we always look for what we call a pivot moment. Right? And when you're giving a presentation and when you're walking through your story, when you're fielding objections, when you're being compared to competitors and you're navigating all of that piece, how you handle that pivot and when that pivot happens is going to determine whether that presentation is a yes or a no. So some guiding principles related to that. Sales is a sales presentation, and sales is art and a theater, right? It's not only what you say, it's not only what you show, but it's the timing in which you deliver all of that, okay? I'll never forget, Jed, I was out with one of my wonderful sales reps. His first name is Andrew. Andrew and I are still connected all these years later. We went out on a presentation. We're sitting face-to-face with that decision maker. And the decision maker says, you know, thanks for the presentation, but I just don't see your magazine. And, hey, why don't you come back in a couple of days and kind of walk me through and show me your, you know, where your magazine is, where I can pick up your publication. And in those days, this particular publication was free. It was at grocery stores or convenience stores and restaurants and shopping centers and so forth. So we said, oh, okay, that, you know, good enough. But you'll come back in a couple of days with that. He goes, okay. And we left that meeting, looked at each other and said, what just happened there? He goes, well, you know, we didn't close it. There was no pivot. He kind of just blew us off, didn't he? I said, yeah. And he said, I don't like that. And I looked at him. I said, I don't like that either. I said, we're going back to the office. We're going to put together our distribution list. We're not coming back in a couple of days, and we're going to come back here in the next hour. We're going to gather up all of our distribution information. We're going to put it in the three-ring binder, and we're coming right back to sit in front of the same decision maker. We're not even going to tell him that. And sure enough, that's what we did. We went and gathered all of our information, hadn't planned to do this, stopped our day to go get it, to go compile it, to put it in a three-ring binder, walked back in and got the sale. In essence, a one-call close. And that was a really telling piece to this story because we realized that sales was a theater and sales was timing, and we didn't have all the information we needed. This, again, is like bats and baseball and being a hitter. If I'm at the plate and I don't have all the information about my hitting, my strengths and weaknesses, or the pitcher, guess what? is really likely I'm not going to hit that pitch. And I'm going to wonder why I'm going to strike out and then strike out and then strike out again. I wonder why I didn't get that sales presentation this morning, this afternoon, or the one yesterday. What happened? Right? So the timing of it all. And thereafter, whenever we were in a sales presentation, Andrew, myself, or others on our sales teams, and the decision maker would say, well, I just don't see your magazine. And we would say, oh, well, hang on. With your permission, I've got a three-ring binder. We'd pull it right out. We would address that objection right there on the spot, Jed, and we would write ad page after ad page, one call close because the timing of that, right? So a very compelling story, Jed, of having all the materials with us, yes?
Do you think that if you had that information in your first meeting that client would have said yes? Or do you think that there's some sort of psychological component where an advertiser wants that pause, right? They need to not say yes too fast, because then they feel like they're not necessarily considering everything, or they're not necessarily giving themselves a chance to think about it, right?
So here's the deal. I kind of think about sales and ad sales specifically like a pot of water, and I'm making pasta, right? And I need to get a full boil right before I put the pasta in. And just before the full boil, the last thing I want to do is put a brick of ice in that boiling water, because guess what happened? I'm going to have to wait another 30 minutes for that to melt to get it back up to boil again. Right? So in the world of media and ad sales, when you have a buyer's attention, whether you're doing it by phone, whether you're doing it in person, whether you're doing it in a group, one-on-one, whether you're tying in an ad agency, whatever it might be, the fact is that you're together, they're there to talk about media and decisions, and I want to make my full presentation. I want to show that I'm fully prepared. I want to show that I've done my research. I want them to know that I have a presentation that's full and complete, and I'm ready to field their questions. It gives me the confidence to come into that meeting. It also gives me the opportunity to have them say yes, because long after leaving that meeting, I don't want to chase them for a day or a week or a month or months, plural, and still not get that sale when I had that opportunity on that Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock. You follow me? Now, don't misunderstand. If there is truly something that an ad agency wants to take offline or a decision maker wants to do, that's fine. I still want to give my best presentation, giving me the best opportunity to get a yes. And on the other side, giving them the opportunity to get rolling with my media solutions. They're focused on it, we're focused on it, and we're ready to go forward. Okay?
Yes.
All right, very good. Yep, Jed, something you want to add to that?
No, I just said I was agreeing with you.
Perfect. All right. So let's continue down this path, let's continue talking about that pivot moment, right? That pivot moment is what sets you apart, right? Is it your distribution? Is it your circulation if you're on the paid or controlled side? Is it your editorial? Some of you that are with us have editorials. Some of you do not. You know who you are. Is there an advantage from that perspective? What about your ad results, right? And we'll be talking about that a little later. But what about your ad results, and how does that compare to the competitors? How does that compare to the marketplace? How does that compare to the expectations of the advertisers? What about the tenure of your team? You know, if you're on a team and you go, hey, Ernest, are you kidding? I've been here 4 years. This one's been here 6. That one's been here 9. This one's been here 14. Tenure and longevity is really one of those key advantages. It sets you apart, right? And then we also talk about when we go looking for those pivots, we talk about, you know, what is the history of that buyer or that account? Are they new to advertising with us? Are they a former advertiser? What's the history? Any payment issues? Anything we know about their hot buttons? Why they are advertising with others, not you, with you? Do we know anything about why they used to advertise, or maybe why we have found them and they've never advertised at all? So again, you know, these are those moments where you sort of look for that particular pivot. I was speaking earlier today with a media group, and we were on a conference call, and we had one person in D.C. One person, one person in Italy, one in D.C., one in Miami, and one in Israel. And the person in Israel actually went to the University of Florida, Jed, which means he's a Gator. Two of my brothers are Gators. I lived in Florida since 1967. We had this wonderful, warm connection because of that Florida piece, and it let us kind of lean in, enjoy the connection, enjoy the conversation, and then, of course, we got to the business side. How did I know that? Because I pulled this person up on LinkedIn. I was able to see their professional background. We also, when we look for pivots, we also look for the hot buttons, the buying signals. The buying signals that might have come in the phone call in terms of the setting of that meeting, the buying signals of the emails back and forth, the buying signals that you're going to pick up at the beginning, during, and through the end of that meeting. So we have to constantly, much like baseball, which ties into bats and being at bat, but the same things apply here. Right? In order to address their hot buttons, we have to really be listening with four ears. We have to really be looking for the pauses, right? We have to be looking for their concerns or their objections. We have to be walking them through our presentation and page by page confirming, are we on track? Is this what we need to cover? Is this valuable? Is this helpful? Is this more or less than you were expecting? Okay? So those are the kinds of things. And then, of course, we also, in order to create this pivot moment where we go from a no to a yes, we want to know what their media buys and what their media budgets are. All right? And, Jed, as you know, it's not like you can call up a prospect, hey, listen, Lucy, before I get there on Tuesday, could you give me a spreadsheet of all your spends? Can you give me a spreadsheet of where you're at? No, there's an expectation that we've done our homework. It doesn't mean if Lucy's making 12 media buys and maybe I'm only able to identify seven of them, at least it shows Lucy I did something. At least I did my best to back into what her spend is. It shows Lucy that I'm way more sophisticated and way sharper than other sales reps that come in blindly and say, hi, it's me, and I hope you'll buy an ad. Gee, tell me where you're advertising. I hope you'll talk me into your budget. In that particular conversation, not only flying blind, we're flying naive, and we're not showing that we've really done any homework, any reason to justify our existence to sit in front of them. That was one of the earliest things, Jed, I learned in the 80s from my Xerox training. Xerox said, before you settle in, you've got to show that buyer that you have earned the right to sit in front of them. Show them that you care. Show them that you've done something to demonstrate, right, that you are committed to working with them and that you're knowledgeable about the particular media space. Does that make sense, Jed?
I mean, the one thing that I wanted to, you know, that when you were talking that I thought of is that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, longevity can be a huge advantage, and there's no doubt that it can. And I think that, you know, a salesperson who has experience and can, you know, sort of has been through the sales process many times, obviously has a big advantage. But the one thing that, you know, that I found is that sometimes with salespeople who are experienced, right, they have a tendency to sort of remember objections and to remember the issues that they've had with clients oftentimes much more clearly than the clients themselves. So you know, it's a, you know, you don't want a salesperson to sort of anticipate objections because they ran into objections when they made a similar presentation 6 months, 9 months, a year earlier, right? It's that's why sometimes when a new salesperson reaches out to a client or a potential advertiser who has you know, said no many times before, oftentimes a lot of those objections sort of just disappear, right? Because oftentimes the objections are sort of following the sales rep as opposed to being a true objection about the product.
Mm-hmm. you do make a valid point, and that is for those. Let me go back to the tenure piece just for a second, because I was working with a media group this morning, and we were talking about that, and there was this just little comment like, "Oh gosh, I can just walk right into Bill's office, and you know he always renews, and I know exactly what his spend is. I help him with that, and he always remembers that. You know, when we first got started, I saved his bacon. I got him into the first deadline, or I fixed a phone number that was wrong, or you know, and that little comment, you know, I saved his bacon. I can walk in his office. He always renews. He knows me well." You know, there's something to be said for that kind of personal connection. And whether you meet your advertisers in person or by phone, it doesn't matter. You still have that bond and that connection and that acknowledgement of our work done together and the backstory. Jed, to your point, though, I know what you're saying because there are sometimes those who have done this for so long that they sort of can't break out of the mold or aren't willing to make some of the shifts, especially with today's new media, are not willing or able to make those shifts. In some cases, it's just a rotation of prospects, just a rotation that says, hey, this has been the 75 or 100 or 200 I've been working on. Why don't we take half of those and rotate them between the sales reps, and we'll have a fresh look at it as well. And Jed, that may be one of the things that you were thinking about related to kind of a fresh point of view tied to a prospect. You with me on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I just think it's hard, right, for a sales rep who's been told no several times by the same person to go in with a completely sort of without any preconceptions mm-hmm. about how the meeting is going to go. You know, I know that I personally probably couldn't do it. You know, I think that it takes a real sales professional with the kind of short-term memory, right, loss mm-hmm. that they need to make that happen. That's all I was suggesting is just that, mm-hmm. Sometimes tenure can be a great thing, and but it also has a downside.
Valuable point, because what I've observed about tenure is not everyone who has been in media for an extended period of time is pliable or flexible enough, has become a bit too rigid related to the old days were, and certainly you and myself are examples of what? Having been around this space for, 50 years combined, and yet on the other side, we're constantly, constantly engaged, you know, related to what's happening in the current media space. That's just an absolute. So the other piece, you know, related to just wrapping up this first point before we step into BATS, this first point is really a reminder, too, that we, in order to get that pivot, in order to stop a prospect from sort of ending that meeting or just sort of saying, hey, listen, we just take care of our own social media. Everything comes through my website. Oh, gosh, we post and blog on Facebook. Oh, gee, you know, our website SEO. Oh, gosh, you know, fill in the blank. We hear a lot of this sort of do-it-yourself. And yet the reality is to get above the noise in social media is wickedly difficult. And all you have to do is do your homework. It's exactly like the presentation that I explained with Andrew and myself that, you know, literally that buyer said, oh, well, you know, why don't you, go home, bake a couple cupcakes, then come back tomorrow and bring me the cupcakes and we'll talk again. We're like, no, we'll go back to the office. We'll get our distribution list and we'll bring it right back. We learned in that a really valuable lesson that time and timing was everything. And the same rules apply. I don't want an advertiser or a potential advertiser to tell me that there's nothing more important than Twitter for them, and yet there hasn't been a tweet in 6 months. Oh, and they have 4 followers, and there's not been a single like or forward or share. Same on Facebook, because of what we know that happens with Facebook and throttling. Same with LinkedIn, with their algorithms. I mean, all of these pieces, know what you need to know about each of these prospective advertisers so that you can talk coherently and freshly and crisply related to what is actually happening. And they say, hey, my search engine optimization is golden. Well, have you, prior to that meeting, done a search engine for plumbers in Toledo to see that they're on the 4th page? If you don't know that, there's no pivot. They're going to blow smoke at you. They're going to wave you off like the story of Andrew and myself, and they're going to basically move down to their next meeting, and they're probably not going to circle back to you for weeks, months, or maybe never along the way because they sort of put you in a box and said, yep, I kind of handled that sales rep. But if you pause and say, well, no, that's interesting, because as before I came into our meeting this morning, I actually printed out three of the keywords and phrases to find a plumber like yourself, and here you are on the fourth page on this term, third page on this, and fifth on that. All right, and I'm often asked, Jed, is that something you tuck into the presentation, or is that something you keep in your back pocket? And here is my piece related to that. I always want it in my back pocket. I always want it there if I need it. But if I can get, you know, when they say the shortest distance between two points is a straight line, if I can get a straight line, just walk through my presentation and get that handled, then make my presentation, get my agreement, I'm done. But if they're going to say to me that their SEO is golden and that's why they really don't need my media solutions, then I'm going to say my three favorite words, with your permission, Lucy, I actually have printed versions of your search engine visibility as of this morning. Boom. Would it be okay? I'll put it on your desk. GR, Facebook is actually golden. Well, that's interesting. Lucy, with your permission, can I show you? I looked at the last 6 months. I see how many followers you have. Were you aware of the frequency of your posts? There's only two a month. Not two a day. Gee, have you noticed there's no likes or comments in the last 3 months? So, you know, tell me more. And that's really the piece in order to get that pivot moment. The pivot moment is because Lucy is now going to pause. And she's either going to say, I didn't know that, or I am unhappy because I thought I was getting something else. And that becomes a pivot moment. A pivot moment also happens when you're in the middle of a presentation and you're walking through your tracking results, for example, and Lucy jumps in and says, what did you just say? What does that measure? What does that record? How does that work? Lucy begins to interrupt you. You know that a pivot is coming. This is where we look for those pivots. And if you don't get a pivot in a presentation, you don't get from a no to a yes. It doesn't happen. So what you have to bring is compelling information, not just in your presentation, but you have to know your competitors cold. You have to know their marketing and advertising cold. You have to have done some work around their budget and their media spend in order to be respectful and to earn their respect. And if any of those things or all of those things happen, any given buyer will stop you along the way, and it might just be that moment at the beginning of a presentation that pivots and you get your yes. And you didn't cover any of what we've just talked about in the way of prep. Or it might be that SEO moment where you pull out the pages and you show Lucy she's on the fourth page, and that may be the moment. You don't know in a sales presentation where the pivot's going to happen, but it will happen if you're prepared for it. Jed, questions or observations or comments regarding the pivot?
The pivot probably has a lot to do with just anticipating objections, right? And being prepared. You know, it could be anything, right? It could be circulation, it could be social media. We could come up with a list of, you know, the 10 most common objections, right? And, you know, and being prepared for each one of them really is probably the point at which your presentation either goes well or goes badly.
You're exactly right. And for those of you who are part of our Tuesday Sales Academy, you know that we have a distinct checklist directly corresponding to this. What are those key things to prepare? What is the key research? So what you're hearing today is a very fast, high level of that. But if you'd like to learn more and a more granular approach and step by step, just send me a follow-up note and send us a follow-up note afterward, and we'd be more than happy to share that and talk to you about that. All right, so let's circle back. I want to address a question from Max in Pennsylvania, who says, how best to get the list of clients so you know which ones to pitch. Max, frankly, the easiest piece, LinkedIn. 700 million people on LinkedIn. Anyone who's anybody is there. The understanding of how to use LinkedIn, to how to do a search for by title, by person, by company, then looking over at the overall company is key, and then everything is there. It's phenomenal. Max, in my days of ad selling sales, if I called somebody up and said, hey, Max, it's Ernest, and I want to come talk to you about my media, my magazine, my publication. Hey, Max, before I get there, could you send me your resume? Could you tell me about your entire professional background, where you went to college, all the jobs you've had, how long you've worked? Could you send that to me? You'd have hung up on me. Go to the world of LinkedIn. It's all sitting there. Max, I can go look at your background, and I can do my homework, much like the gentleman who was in Israel this morning, and I knew that he went to the University of Florida and was a Gator. Okay? So, Max, certainly thank you for that question. I'm hoping that's helpful from that perspective. So, Jed, let's talk about that.
Can I add one thing to that?
Can I just add
one thing to that question?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the common mistakes I think publications oftentimes make is when they're thinking about the types of advertisers that would you know, best apply to their publication, mm-hmm. they think about the types of advertisers that they sort of most covet, and mm-hmm. oftentimes they're, you know, big flashy advertisers that they believe are going to make their publication look better than you know, smaller, you know, sort of less well-branded advertisers. I think very often the best way to think about this is, what do your readers need, right? What are your readers going to respond to? What are the types of products or services that you think, you know, your readers are most likely to spend money on? Because really, those are the advertisers who you should be going after. Right. I don't know what they are. It changes based on geography, based on the type of publication you have, based on the demographics of your publication. But getting an understanding of what it is your readers are spending money on, that should lead you in a direct line to the types of advertisers that you want to approach.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And Max, we're hoping that's helpful in all of you who are joining us. And those of you who are listening to this teleseminar long after we're done, we're hoping that that is helpful from your perspective. So let's talk about bats. Bats. 278 teleseminars later, Jed, I've never used bats in a sentence. Bats fly. don't be batty. Might be another way to think about it. But today we're talking about bats as in baseball bats, okay? Bats that BATS stands for what we're going to talk about today. But there's a little bit of reference because in the selling world, there's some comparisons. For example, how many times are you at bat? Which simply means, how many times are you able to go out and give a presentation? When we get working with media sales teams, that's one of those first conversations that we talk about, right? Related to your opportunities to give a presentation and make a presentation. How many balls, strikes, or hits do you have while at bat, right? So now we're talking about how many phone calls and how many phone calls convert into a meeting and how many meetings convert into a presentation, how many presentations convert into a sale. We all know about the tracking of that, similar to baseball from that perspective. But you have to be what? At bat to win. You also have to learn when at bat how to improve, much of what we're going to talk about here today. It's not just IQ, which is smart enough to sell ads, it's EQ, bright enough and aware enough to realize what's happening around you when you're in a presentation and where that pivot is. So let's talk about BATS. B stands for brag sheet. Brag sheet is that classic example. Don't we all have examples? Once upon a time, I put an ad in for a landscaper. They got $40,000 in bids in the first 3 days. Don't we all have those examples? Right, our brag sheet that says, here are some examples of success that we have generated for our advertisers. You need to have that to be able to go click send, so that you, if you're making a cold call by phone, that you can send that quickly to that prospect. Well, I don't think we really need that. You know, we're just a chiropractor, and our chiropractic service, you know, we just get plenty of word of mouth and referrals. Gee, that's interesting, Lucy. Would it be okay with your permission? I'll send you over some of the results we're getting for some of the other chiropractors that we advertise for. Okay? A brag sheet. Having a brag sheet is a quick one-sheeter if you're in person, even if you're at a trade show, the kind of success that you've generated so that you don't have to repeat the story. It has more credibility because it's in writing. And frankly, if I'm a new hire joining your team, I don't know all those stories. Now we're back to that tenure piece. If I'm a 10-year sales rep for, you know, a chiropractor magazine, guess what? No problem. I know them by heart. But I don't know if I'm a new hire. So new hires love these, a brag sheet. This also weaves into testimonials. You backed it up with testimonials. And here, so on one sheet, I've got my ad results, and I'm bragging about the things we've done and accomplished. On page two, I've got what? The testimonials. The testimonials of that have been written to me by those chiropractors who have said what a wonderful job I've done advertising for them. And then the third piece is the case studies. Once upon a time, I began working with a chiropractor. They just bought the smallest of ad. And then the ad grew, and then the ad grew, and then one day they had two offices. Then they had three offices. Then they sold it at the cap of five offices. Tell those stories. Bring that along. Tell those case studies. Once upon a time, the chiropractor who had advertised for 10 years with one of your competitors advertised with you side by side, and you ran circles around them. These are the kind of stories that fall under the letter B. We're bragging about, we're telling our story, okay? And that's vitally important if you want a pivot. Oh, no, thanks. We take care of all of our own social media. We got all of our own leads. It's all referrals. No worries about us. We're different than all the other chiropractors. If you don't have something next to say to that, that meeting's over. So now your response is, okay, thanks. I'll come back, you know, next lifetime because you're golden. That presentation is over. There's nothing more to sell. Okay, or if you begin to maybe give some examples, yeah, the examples are being heard, but they're not really sticking. That's why we put them in writing. B for brag sheet. A in BATS. A stands for ad spend. We touched on that earlier, Jed and myself. What is their ad spend? Where are they spending it? How much? Okay, how long have they been there? What ad sizes? You know, being able to track, Jed, you and I have done teleseminars, just focus on ad drop reports and the value of them, knowing exactly what's happening with competitors. I was working with a media team earlier this week, and they literally said, I have a competitor that watches every ad that I put in. They go after every ad that they see. They know exactly which ads have gone away. They know exactly which ones went up or down. Ernest, it's like they're looking over my shoulder. And I said, that is a wicked competitor. Because generally, it's us tracking our competitors and us working that crisply. I want to pause and acknowledge and recognize that you have a very formidable, wicked competitor. But that's the rarity in media sales to have somebody or have a competitor that is that strong from that perspective. But back to the ad spend. You have to know. How do we know? We have their rate cards. We can see what they're doing on their website. We can see what they're doing on the newsletter, what the advertisers are. We can see what they're doing in print. So you can roll up that information and begin to see. For some of you that may pause and say, but how do I see on the digital side? Well, if I'm going to go in and speak to Mike's Plumbing in Toledo, I can put that on the web, Mike's Plumbing in parentheses in Toledo, and I'm going to see where Mike's Plumbing shows up, which gives me what? Another indicator of where they are on the digital side. And then if they're on the digital side and that digital website has a print companion, I can pull up the rate card and look at the website ad. I can also be able to see the print ad, and I would imagine that if that competitor, that media competitor, was an ongoing competitor, I would have already been subscribing to the newsletter from that perspective. Let me just pause here. Jed, any additional comments or observations related to the first 2 points of BATS that I've shared?
Yeah, you know, I think when it comes to ad spend, I think that it's obviously great to sort of go in there and having some sense of what a business's current ad spend is. I still think that if you're able to show a prospective advertiser that your audience is uniquely predisposed to spend money with them, that the ad spend, you know, becomes less of an issue, right? It's really more about the, you know, what the ad spend will yield than the actual initial outlay. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that too often, you know, publications sort of get into a negotiation over, you know, over pricing and over ad spend, and forget that it's really the reason for advertising is to drive new business and to sort of focus on that.
A valid point, Jed, from that perspective. The piece here we just want to acknowledge is that if an advertiser says, hey, look, our budget's already locked up, or we're over budget, or I don't have a budget for you, Well, you want something to say to them in response. Otherwise, like, oh, okay, I guess if you don't have any budget, I guess we're done. Rather than being to say, gee, I've actually noticed you're in five sources. I've kind of rolled up your budget. Would you be willing to consider a small adjustment on this or run a side-by-side for that? By the way, Jed, back to your point, you know, when you invest a dollar with us, what you can expect is $3 or $5 or $7 back. You know, so we do – advertising makes money. There is no doubt for advertisers when we're presenting that way. But sometimes to create that pivot, we need to be able to show them that we have some understanding of what their spend is and where they're spending it so that we can sort of anticipate that objection. You follow me on that?
That makes sense. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, very good. So let's talk about the last two pieces of BATS. We've talked about the B and the A. Let's talk about T, which, Jed, this is actually your sweet spot because T stands for what? Tracking. The ability to track an ad, to have trackable results, whether we're tracking ads by phone calls, whether we're tracking them by lead forms, whether we're tracking it by sales results, whether we're tracking it by the visual of their Google Analytics that is driving up the visual hits for Mike's Plumbers that they can see that, boy, if that magazine comes out on the 20th of this month, they can see the spike of the inbound activity that's happening. There's many ways to track this. But Jed, certainly this is a space where MediaBids lives a lot of its time, yes?
Yeah. I mean, there's probably no single bigger mistake that publications have made in the last 20 years than forfeiting all of their data, right? And so what tracking really is the ability for you as a publication to be able to tell an advertiser and know how an advertiser is performing, right? You should be able to say to it doesn't matter, you can pick any example, to a hardware store, for example, you know, we've had other hardware stores that have advertised and they've advertised, you know, a special for, you know, for rock salt and they did very well. They sold, you know, 75 bags of rock salt, right? I mean, there are ways of tracking the results of print ads, but unfortunately, you know, many print publications have sort of taken a pass on it because it is hard, right? It's a pain to sort of set up. It's much easier just to run an ad with no real thought about how it performs and how it ends up doing for the advertiser, right? You collect the money for the space and you move on. I'm not suggesting that you should sort of go all the way and do what we do a lot at MediaBids and charge based on the response that's generated. I think that, you know, that's sort of a second step, but I think the initial first step can be extremely valuable, and that is using 800 numbers, using unique URLs, using, you know, coupon codes. You know, there are lots of ways of doing it, but you should be able to tell your advertiser, you got X response from your ad that you placed in my publication. And by doing this, it really changes the dynamic of the sales process. If you can present an advertiser with information on how they have performed, what you're doing is you're no longer asking them, you know, for, you know, to take a risk and spend money on something which is somewhat undefined. What you're doing is you're saying, I've delivered this many customers, you know, I can tell you right now it's either working for you or it's not working for you. And if it's working for you, that's great, and it's easy, right? And getting an ad renewal is simple. If it's not working, though, it's just as valuable because instead of going into an advertiser blind and saying, you know, hey, how'd your ad do last week? You know, did you get any response? And hoping and praying that advertiser is going to come back and say, yeah, I think it did okay. I'll run another ad, right? You're going in and you're saying, you know, hey, Joe, I see that you only got two phone calls. We need to try something different, right? We need to, you know, put something different in the ad. Maybe we can try different positioning. Maybe we can try a different size. Whatever it might be, right, you're no longer someone who's trying to sell them something that that is undefined, right, hoping that they spend money. Now what you're doing is you're going in and you're saying to an advertiser, I'm here to make you money. I'm here to help you, right? And I can see that what I sold you last time didn't make you money, right? So now let's change it. Let's try something different. Let's experiment, right? My experience has been that advertisers appreciate that, right? That's what they want. They want to know how it's doing, and they want to they want to make changes that are going to ultimately make them money. This is really the main advantage that online advertising has over print, right? Is that your customers who are buying print ads are also buying Google AdWords, right? They're also buying banner ads. They're also doing Facebook and LinkedIn possibly. You know, they're using these other media channels, which present them with this information in real time and you know, in a dashboard that's easy to understand. I'm not suggesting that, you know, that you even go that far, but to completely turn your back on it is a mistake, and it is costing you sales. I promise you.
Okay, so this piece related to tracking is vitally important. And when we come together next month, Jed is going to share the culmination of all that they do. You know, behind the scenes, when you hear Jed talking about tens of thousands of magazines over the years, hundreds of thousands of ads, millions of inbound calls over the last 20 plus years at MediaBids. Look, he knows, they know what they're talking about, and they have the most unique vantage point of seeing ads on the left and ad results on the right. I truly believe if you sat behind his keyboard and you watched the data and the information, your mouth would drop. And we talk about tracking. It is vital. It's BAT, and that S is what syncs up with BATS. So let's finish up the last one under the letter S. That stands for side-by-side comparisons. Side-by-side is a signature part, Jed, as you know, of work that we've done with our media teams and clients. We literally will come off a call on a Tuesday and say, before the sun goes down, I want a media comparison of each of those competitors. Or over the next 3 days, if these are your three toughest competitors, we need that in place, because that creates that pivot moment of, with your permission, can I show you side by side what they do well, praise, what we do well, praise, but what we do that's extraordinary, unique, or exceptional, okay? Side by side comparisons, you can circle back to. We've done entire full hour-long teleseminars about this. For those of you that are part of our Ad Sales Academy on Tuesdays, you know that we come in and out of this topic on a very regular and reoccurring basis. The bottom line is that when you get to competitors, you have that same three paths. If you want a pivot, your side-by-side is the pivot. If you don't have a side-by-side comparison, if you can't talk about competitors, then you end up with one of two other responses, either A, gee, I guess since you're with them, I guess everything's fine, I guess you're happy, meeting's over. You either hang up or leave their office. There's nothing more to say. Or you say, well, you know, related to their magazine, they are, and the moment you begin to say it, you're bad-mouthing, which is not professional and will turn off your buyers and will not create the pivot. It sounds like hearsay, rumor, and because it's not in writing, it's not powerful enough from that perspective, okay? So those are the four components. I wanted to address Michael in Tennessee had a question. How does BATS relate to ad sales in a trade publication where readers are from the same industry? Michael, just like the example of chiropractors, the fact that you're focused on advertisers in the same sector, in the same industry, not only is the best and easiest way to sell ads, but it's highly competitive, meaning you've got advertisers that are competing for the same space. They know each other. They're looking for premium placement. They're looking for prime location. There's a lot of what I call selling from scarcity and pre-selling. You should literally have things pre-sold for all of this year and well into next year in terms of prime or select placement. So BATS relates directly to that and will help you immensely from that perspective, okay? Let me tuck in one more question, Jed. We have one from David in North Carolina, who says he's asking about past advertising success. So, David, based on that particular question, having past advertising success, syncs up with what you heard Jed talking about related to the tracking side, that if you've had past success, you should be able to renew that easily, which means you can also talk to those other nearby competitors to that particular advertiser. So, for example, if I'm doing well with a chiropractor's office, it's easier for me to go sell the two competitors of that who are also chiropractors and be able to sell those ads from that perspective. For those of you that have city magazines, business journals, newspapers, all the same rules apply. We call that veins of gold. So if I'm selling a city magazine or I'm selling a newspaper ad and I sell something to one chiropractor, then I'm going to go find a second or third as well. But if I, in the case of David, if my entire publication, if I understand this right, my entire publication is focused on one particular category, or similar to what Michael's question was, it means it's very easy or easier to generate and make that sale. Jed, any comments on either of those questions from Michael or David?
I would say that you know what tracking does, and you know, and I think this is at least a partial answer to the question. I mean, what tracking does is it really changes the equation from you just selling ad space to you selling access to readers, right? And what, you know, going back to the first question in the teleseminar of, you know, of how do you you know, like how do you get an ad sales list, right? I mean, one of the things that tracking does is that it gives you the ability to see what your readers are responding to. And I'll tell you that chances are you will be surprised, right? I know I am surprised all the time. We have examples where we place an ad in a publication that we think is going to be an absolute home run, and it's not. And vice versa, right? We have ads that run in publications that you would think have very little, would have the readers would have very little interest in the product or service being advertised, but it ends up being an extreme success. So there's, you know, only by tracking can you begin to understand what it is that readers are looking for. And once you understand what readers are looking for, then you can provide access to these readers to similar businesses. So let's say, you know, in the example of the hardware store that I used earlier, if the hardware store says, you walk into the hardware store and you say, hey, good news, you know, you got 17 phone calls last week, and the guy's having, you know, a tough time or says, you know, is just in a bad mood and says, you know, I'm not going to advertise anymore, you know, you can say, okay, you know, that's too bad. I'll come back and see you in a month. But you can walk down the street or call up another hardware store and say, you know, how would 17 new customers sound to you next week? Because one of the things about print, which is absolutely shocking, is how consistent it is. We have ads that are running, in some cases, that have been running in publications for 15 years. And week in and week out, they almost never vary by more than 20%. It literally takes like a natural disaster for people not to respond in the same pattern that they did from the week before. I don't understand it. It's shocking. You would think that the audience in print would be finite enough and static enough that there would not sort of consistently be the same demand. But there really is an incredible consistency when it comes to print publications. And so for that reason, you can in good faith sort of say, you know, a product or service got 12 calls last week. Chances are they're going to get between 10 and 14 calls next week. That's the truth. So you know, it's easy to attract competitors, easy to attract additional advertising when you're able to sort of, you know, make those kinds of, when you're able to throw those numbers around, because ultimately that's what's exciting to advertisers. And then, you know, and then to take it a step further, now the question is, what happens with those callers? What happens with those people who walk in off the street as a result of a print ad? Well, all of our data shows that people who respond to print ads are enormously more likely to buy than any other medium. our conversion rate from an initial caller or an initial responder to a sale is about 40%, 40%. So when an advertiser says to you, you know, we're using Facebook and it's working really well, ask them how many sales they're making, right? Because you can't compare clicks to an actual person who's responding to a print ad. People are responding to print ads. It's a very considered response. It's a very intentional response. And the types of people who are reading print tend to be much, much different than the types of people who are clicking on a Facebook ad just in a casual sort of casual way. They're Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, Google AdWords, you're much less likely to make a sale. So by accumulating all this data, right, you can really do yourself a favor and make your sales process a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And so we're hoping that that's helpful for those of you that have set your questions in advance. You can hear the passion that Jed and I have for and around media sales and the tracking of, and the knowledge, quite honestly. We've been around the block for more than a minute related to media sales, media tracking, media results, media renewals, and, of course, media success, which takes us into the third and last point, and then we'll wrap up for today. What is the secret sauce, right, for winning 100% of your sales presentations? Okay, so we're not here to close 1 of 4 or 2 of 5 or 3 of 7. That's not what this is about. You go into every single presentation with your best presentation, your only presentation, with the intention of what? Closing that sale. Why would you consider anything less than that? And that brings us right back to BATS. We want you to keep score. How many presentations did you give in the month of January? How many closed? And if you were being honest, what would you have learned from those? If you were doing your post-evaluation, Jed, in my corporate days, we would come out of a sales presentation, we'd come out to the curb or out to the car, sit for a minute, take a breath, I would turn to the sales rep and I'd say, so, what did you observe? What went positive? Let's talk about that, point 1, 2, 3, and I might add it a fourth or fifth point. Then I would say, what didn't go so well, or why didn't we get that sale? They might say, here are the two reasons. And I would say, yes, those are two, but there's two more. Now, where was the pivot when we did get the sale? What happened? What was it that you said or that we showed that took a pivot and we went from a no to a yes? Now we capitalize on that. This is about EQ. This is about being aware of what's moving around you. Keep score of what happens at bat. Be honest about the post-meeting evaluation. Review your notes during the meeting. Review your notes after the meeting so that triggers your follow-up. Improve and upgrade your presentation, your visuals, and tools. I was working with a media group about 90 minutes, Jed, before we got started here, and we were talking about tracking, and we were talking about one aspect of it in their media kit, and they said, gosh, we've had this media kit, and we've been in business for 25 years, but Ernest, what you're sharing about the additional piece in our media kit, we didn't even think about that. We weren't even including that. We'll have that done to you on your desk before lunch tomorrow. I said, great, we need that, because that may be the most important pivot moment. I don't know where in the presentation with that pivot moment will happen, but you need that additional page in there in order to get that pivot from that perspective. Also, part of our secret sauce, you've been hearing us talk about the tracking of results, the tracking of competitors, and what's happening in and out of their publications, newsletters, and websites, and of course, continuing to watch your competitors. You want to know your competitors even better than you know yourself, your team, and your media solutions. Be consumed with them. They'll teach you. They'll show you exactly how to compete and compare, and they will help you win. And certainly in my 25 years of coaching, Jed, while I'm on the one side helping my team have the best story, the best presentation, fielding all of those objections, it would be naive to not suggest that we don't that we don't know our competitors cold. We always, always go down that path. I always want to know their competitors. I want to know their strengths and weaknesses. I want to know their side-by-sides. I want to know about their team. I want to know about their ad results. I mean, everything that I can possibly, because I'm looking for every single advantage to help me as a business and sales coach help my media teams do what? Pivot towards success. Hence, we wrap up today's conversation about bats and our ad secret sauce. Jed, always a pleasure working together, a delight to be here together over all of these years. Thank you so much for all of the support from you and your team. For those of you who are working with MediaBids, you know the incredible reputation that they have over the last two decades. For those of you that are not or are newer to MediaBids, go into their website, go learn about what they do. It's powerful, it's compelling, it's engaging, and they know exactly how to help you win. Lastly, come into our website, powerhour.com. We host an ad sales academy every Tuesday. This is our eighth year doing it, and you will love joining us. Jed, how about some closing words before we wrap up for the day?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Ernest, for bringing the knowledge to this teleseminar. thank you all for joining us. If you're interested in learning more about MediaBids, please go to our website, give us a call. We're always happy to talk, and I encourage you to pursue Ernest's Power Hour forums as well. He does a great job and really gets into a lot of interesting detail about the sales process.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thank
so,
you, everybody.
Thank you for joining us.
We'll see you next month. And Jed, thanks so much. Take care.
Thank you. Talk to you soon. Bye.